Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and in studio today, I am joined by a panel of guests, and we're going to be discussing the issue of education and how, you know, technology is being used to aid students in South Africa to actually get into some of the top universities around the world. In studio, I have Jamie Beaton. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Bang on. Yes.
Bang on. Jamie Beaton, who is the co-founder of Crimson, which is an ed tech platform that is helping South Africans to actually get into top universities around the world, as I said. And we are also joined by Rebecca Pretorius, who is the country manager for South Africa at Crimson. How are you guys?
Good, thanks. Thanks Brilliant. For having us.
Cool. Jamie, let me just start with you. Let's get the obvious question out of the way. Why Crimson? How did it start? Why did you decide that this was the problem you wanted to attack?
Great question. So basically, growing up in New Zealand, I was attending a pretty good school on a scholarship. And, you know, the pathways presented to me basically were stay within New Zealand and do medicine, engineering, or law, or commerce, something like this. When I was about 14, I sat next to a guy on the train called Ben Kornfeld, who was actually heading off to Yale University, and he told me I should consider applying overseas.
Yeah.
So that kind of shifted my focus from New Zealand to offshore. So I kind of prepared over high school for many years doing academics, A-levels, extracurriculars, this kind of thing. Applied to schools across the US, UK, Middle East, Singapore, schools like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, Columbia, Wharton, Cambridge. After getting into all the schools that I applied for, which was a bit of a shock because I didn't know how good my candidacy was or wasn't and what my options were, I then created Crimson to help basically bridge the gap for more students to get into these top schools, because I wanted students you know, like myself, to have a set of opportunities so that wherever they are in the world, it didn't matter kind of how their future would play out. So that was sort of how I got the ball rolling. And in New Zealand, back in 2016, every single kid that got into Harvard and Stanford from the whole country was trained by us. And about three quarters of the nations admits to the Ivy League, or the top eight schools in America, came from Crimson.
Oh, wow.
So after we saw those results, and New Zealand's a very diverse place. We've got kids from, you know, South Africa, you know, China, Korea, India. We wanted to take the business global. So we raised a lot of venture capital funding and took our model all around the world, built out a technology platform, and that's sort of how we've expanded all around the world. And now all students use our custom learning app, the Crimson app, and we've got a network of now more than 2,000 mentors from the top universities. So it's a really exciting development. It's been a wild ride.
What's the relationship with South Africa?
So I guess my co-founder, Chandra, is from South Africa herself. Yeah. So, you know, she is really close to the country. And I guess spending so much time with her, I've become close as well. And I guess South Africa is a country where there's a big, you know, value put on education. And there's a real ambition amongst youth. But there's a lot of challenges with domestic universities. So there's a lot of students who want to go overseas. And Chandra herself actually left the country when she was eight, moved to New Zealand, and you know, she actually didn't get much guidance going through high school as to what she, you know, could or couldn't do. So she wished Crimson was around for her own experience, both within South Africa and in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the connection, and we've been operating here for about 3 years now.
Okay, cool. Rebecca, what's the demand actually? What does it actually look like in South Africa? Because on this podcast, we've actually had guests in the past telling us about South Africans, you know, moving money offshore, for example. And now it seems that, you know, there's a similar theme that's coming through. I just saw in the budget speech, and they were talking a lot about, you know, tax residency, a lot of expats, etc. You know, so you've got that theme as well on the tax side. Now in education, you're telling us that there's all these people that want to go and learn overseas. Do you find that people are primarily going overseas to learn and then come back, or are they going to universities elsewhere sort of to set themselves up to then live in those countries?
I would say that we see a mix of both, really. We've got, I think that kids all over the world, I think, in a lot of sense are the same. And, you know, they're globalized. interested in the opportunities abroad, even if that's opportunities during university or the kind of opportunities that come, you know, once they've graduated as well. Having said that, it's a really mixed bag for us in terms of students who say they want to go over and then come back and make a difference in South Africa or come back to family in South Africa. Certainly in terms of immigration facts, what we see in South Africa is that it hasn't really moved that much over a period of time. I think it's pretty stable at between 21 or 23,000 people immigrating a year.
Yeah.
And that needle hasn't moved. In fact, starting off in 2020, there are less people immigrating than there were in 2019.
Yeah.
So far. So I think for us, we see really aspirational students, you know, high performing, high achieving students who are looking for big opportunities. And some of those opportunities will exist for them in South Africa when they come back. And we've seen great students as well, not just in South Africa, but abroad. We've had some Crimson students who have gone back to Nigeria. And it started really cool companies there, you know, really interesting agri-tech companies and so on, and doing a lot of interesting work, and others that have chosen to stay over there. And I think that movement is probably reflects what's happening all over the world as well, you know, for international students coming from, you know, maybe smaller countries like New Zealand, or I think aspirational countries like South Africa, where kids are just looking for great opportunities.
Jamie, what is the... I guess the benefit of going or studying abroad, because someone might be listening and saying, but you know, you're from New Zealand, that's such a great country. you probably have some really good tertiary institutions there. And I guess the thinking, particularly on this continent, is that you sort of move to places where there's better opportunities, but you might think of New Zealand and I guess the rest of the Australasia, you know, area as being, oh, this is where a lot of people actually go, because I don't actually have friends that have learnt in New Zealand per se, but I have a lot of friends that have learnt next door, you know,
Australia.
A Curtin, Monash, etc. in Australia. So why would anyone run away from the places that people are trying to, you know, stuff like that? So can you talk to us from that point of view?
Yeah, sure. So I guess I'll just speak first of all from personal experience. Yeah. So I spent about 6 months at University of Auckland, or New Zealand's highest ranked university, which is about 100th in the world.
Yeah.
And then I did my full undergrad degree at Harvard. Now, basically, what makes a place like Harvard in the US so exciting, first of all, is the quality of students. So you have students from all around the world that are at the top of their class from all these different countries. So you bring together these amazing academic students that all can learn from one another. You know, we had kids in our class who were Math Olympiad medalists, who had competed in the actual sports Olympics, who had created their own companies. And so that sort of cauldron of talent makes everyone a lot stronger. The next thing is, because there's so many great students there, top professors are attracted. So we had professors like Larry Summers, who advised President Obama on the global financial crash and how to stimulate the economy. And he was my thesis advisor, actually, my last year.
Mm.
So that kind of exposure to world-leading faculty that are writing the textbooks, winning the Nobel Prizes, you know, that's pretty hard to, you know, rival. And then I guess finally would be the career outcomes. So, you know, in a place like Harvard, you can actually, you know, get access to the most competitive jobs in the industry, in Silicon Valley, in the technology sector, in the finance sector. You can create your own company. So one of my alumni, Samil, he just got funded in Silicon Valley, about $140,000 USD, or, you know, call it, you know, sort of...
3 million rand somewhere.
Yeah, ballpark, to create his company at age 22. I've had other people that have worked for Facebook, you know, earning about $200,000 USD straight out of high school, I mean, out of college.
Mm.
So the salary power is just, you know, massive compared to, say, New Zealand. So if you take the same person in New Zealand and you put them in Harvard or these top schools, they usually earn about 4 or 5 times as much when they graduate.
Really?
Yeah, so it's just a very clear economic calculus. If you can get in, it's worth it.
Yeah. Because one of the questions then, because the value proposition for Crimson is helping people to get into, you know, some of these top universities. When you've learned at Harvard like you have, and you've given us this list of advantages, you know, that comes with having attended an institution like that. Is it the way that we think of it as, right? Because you are serving a base of kids that want to go there, but you haven't gone there. Was it worth it? And when I say was it worth it, does it come with the When you say I studied at Harvard, do people's eyes perk up, like do they start twinkling, like do people look at all of that?
I'd say definitely in China and Korea and many of the Asian countries we serve, where academics are of huge cultural importance.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of excitement in, you know, talking to students that have done well academically and gone to these great universities. But generally speaking, employers really love these degrees. So I wouldn't say the eyes roll. Maybe you need like to be a pop star or something. But definitely, you know, many employers want to, you know, take this top talent into their companies.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely a big advantage. And also, if you do your undergraduate degree in the US, your flexibility for postgrad is greatly improved. So because I did, you know, Harvard undergrad, it was much easier for me to get into Stanford for my MBA and then to do a PhD at Oxford on the Rhodes Scholarship. So the foundation I had from undergrad made all the other pathways more accessible.
Mm.
So I think, you know, that's some of the benefits for sure.
Okay. Rebecca, just coming back to South Africa specifically, do you feel like the education system here is really preparing kids for, I guess, that international exposure? Because, for example, I think one of the easiest ways to make yourself marketable to international universities might not necessarily be Ivy League, but elsewhere in the world is to do A-levels, for example, mm-hmm. right? But in South Africa, it's not really common to do A-levels. So from that point of view, what have you found to be, I guess, some of the gaps that you guys have to advise, I guess, students and parents on?
Sure. Certainly advising students on what their academic pathway should be in terms of what their goals are is a key part of what we do as well. So we have a lot of high-performing, high-achieving students that are doing a South African qualification. That can be limiting for students that are going to, for example, want to target top universities in the UK, for example. So, you know, Oxford or Cambridge, you know, known collectively together as Oxbridge, don't accept a student with a South African qualification.
Really?
So in that case, wow. Whether one's talking about the IEB curriculum qualification or the NSC, you know, a government or private school exam, the end result is going to be the same. It's going to be seen as a South African qualification. Mm. So certainly if a student knows, you know, or family knows early enough what their goals are, then obviously we can work with them on their academic pathway. Having said that, it's not always a huge barrier. There are a number of top universities in the UK, and we send South African students, you know, help them gain admission to those top universities all the time. And the same is true of the US. You know, we've got students that are, you know, have gone and are going to, you know, Brown, University of Chicago, University of Texas, Austin. So, you know, Ivy League universities and top 50 US universities. The US have the kind of grade level of a standardized test, and South African students, you know, are able to work with us to do really high quality tutoring for their standardized tests, for their admissions tests. So we work with them to kind of bridge that gap, as well as explore kind of further extracurricular, you know, leadership opportunities. So the other kind of gaps that we work on a lot, we provide leadership mentors for our students, particularly targeting the, you know, top US schools, and help them develop a deeper extracurricular profile from a leadership point of view. And from the UK, certainly build out their kind of academic profile. So they're able to target what is essentially an academic gap application in the UK.
And on that, what is the typical age at which people start, you know, exploring or coming to Crimson and trying to get advice from Crimson, versus when do you guys suggest someone approaches Crimson? Because I can imagine that there's a difference between you've matriculated and now you're twiddling your thumb saying, where can I go for university, versus if you were in grade, I guess, 9 or 10, and you get this advice, and then it informs the rest of whatever subjects or exams you then write at when you finally do matriculate. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. I always say to families that I meet, it's never too early to start. The process, and Jamie spoke about, you know, working throughout high school, you know, quite early on, you know, to achieve those goals. It certainly can be too late. Having said that, we have a range of, you know, students across different grades and ages. So we have grade eights working with us, who would then work with us for over 5 years. And we have some students who come to us in matric. In terms of the ideal time, and I always get asked that question, you know, what's the best time to start? Ideally, certainly for students who are looking to target a U.S. school, but even those in a U.K. school, we spoke about the issue of, you know, the academic pathway. Grade 10, I always say, is the sweet spot.
Grade 10.
And the reason for that, it allows the students in South Africa to build out some of their leadership and academic profile, take additional subjects, you know, develop a deeper extracurricular leadership profile before they kind of hit the heaviness of grade 11 and 12. It allows them to use a large part of that grade 11 year to do some standardized testing and keep some of that out of what is, as we know in South Africa, to be a very, very hectic matric year, which is really just exam, and a matric dance in between it. And then it allows them in the grade 12 year to focus on, you know, they're going to be writing their personal statements and essays anyway, you know, filling in the application. So for me, grade 10 is the sweet spot. Allows them enough time without rushing it all in matric. But like I say, where we have younger students, what they're able to do is really build the skills that are required in order to help them handle those big admissions programs and be able to build a really strong candidacy, and not just, you know, do activities for the sake of putting them in their application. Universities can sniff that out a mile away.
Okay. Jamie, can you talk to us about the technology? I'm interested in the technology and how you guys are actually implementing the actual business model. Like, how does it actually work? I think earlier on you mentioned that you've got over 2,000 mentors, all of that stuff. So how is the machine working?
Yeah, sure. It's very exciting. So basically, when a family comes to Crimson, we assess their, you know, profile, and then we recommend them usually about 5 to 7 different mentors. These mentors come from all these top universities like Harvard, Yale, MIT, Cambridge, etc. Once you sign up with Crimson, you get access to our Crimson app, which is mobile and web-based.
Yep.
So you have all of your classroom experiences through our online classroom, which basically has all these resources, you know, note-taking, etc. There's parent reporting features, so as mum or dad, you can follow your child's progress and see how things are going. Every time a session finishes, the student can review the tutor, so Crimson get more and more information as to our different tutors and what types of students they're working well with. Mm. Now, there's some powerful algorithms.
What's actually happening with the tutors? Are they, is it like class maths lessons, or is it like advice coaching sessions? Like, well, what?
Yeah, so there's tutors and teachers who basically are like teaching class, basically.
Yeah.
You know, they've got PowerPoint content, they're going through different A-levels or SATs, etc.
Yeah.
Then there's the advice sessions with, say, admissions consultant, somebody like me, who'll advise you on what activities to do, you know, what you could write your essay about, what schools are a good fit for you, what you should do over the summer, these kinds of things. So there's the advisory sessions, and then there's the sort of hardcore, you know, academic sessions.
Mm.
Now, there's a couple of powerful algorithms that power this. First of all, we have a student-tutor matching algorithm, which uses psychometrics or personality tests to assess the student and tutor across 32 different dimensions on this thing called the Hexaco. We then match students and tutors based on various findings we have to optimize that, the compatibility of that match. So one interesting example is we've found that you know, students that have low scores for things like extroversion, so they're quite introverted, really do a lot better with an extroverted tutor. Mm. And so our algorithm will prioritize that kind of finding. The other powerful algorithms we have are around the actual admissions process. So we've built the most powerful global admissions engine, which basically, if you type in your stats, tells you what schools you can get into, what are reach schools, match schools, safety schools, what your odds are. This means that rather than relying on a human to just recommend schools to you, we have all these statistics that spit out all of these recommended schools. This is quite powerful because, as I say, grade 10 student, you can type in your stats and see what you can get into right now. Then as you do more and more work and your grades improve, you can see the universities you're going to get into getting, you know, better and better. So we help to kind of demystify that process. So Crimson combines data science as well as our, you know, different learning applications to make this very accessible. The other things we do is we have, for example, the largest video platform in the world around university, where kids can watch one of 5,000 videos about top schools like, you know, Harvard or Yale or UC Berkeley.
Mm. And, are you guys producing that content yourselves?
Produce the content ourselves, okay. Yeah. So we've got a full-time video crew that flies around the schools, and they're quite a campus hit these days. We've got about 150,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel and a video platform behind that. So that's very cool as well.
And I'm interested also in the algorithm, right?
Yeah.
What's informing the algorithm? Like, have you gone and spoken to, I guess, admission departments around the world? Are you looking at the odds of different types of demographics? Like, how are you informing the algorithm?
I love it. Yeah, so my background's in applied math. I worked on Wall Street before creating Crimson, and we had this stock portfolio optimization algorithm. So the basic logic originally comes from finance, and we look at stats like geography, passport status, how much money you need, what cities you want to apply for, your A-level grades, SAT scores, your extracurriculars, all these factors. Now, where does the data come from? So basically, we've sourced more than 1 million data points from schools and from students all around the world. They fill out our surveys to then let us know their stats, what schools they got into. And then also we've got our internal Crimson clients that go through the process, and then we can track all of their data and then what schools they get into, and then feed that data back into the algorithm.
Yeah.
So at this point, because we send so many kids overseas every year, we've got a powerful engine that keeps renewing our data and adding to it, as well as our external data sources. So all of that basically helps to feed the data science team's work. And then we recalibrate the algorithm after every admission cycle to see how trends are changing. But yeah, that's basically how the algorithm works.
I'm very interested in the technology, I won't lie. When I'm on the app or I'm on the website, you know, whichever form I get onto Crimson on, and I input my data, right, is it able to tell me on the spot what my chances are for the different universities? And as I input more data, I guess, if I start in grade 10, does it keep recalculating and rebalancing all of those scores?
That's right, yes. So basically, you go onto our algorithm right now, and there's a public version and also a private version for our clients. The public version basically lets you go onto a website and type in your stats, and then it spits out different schools, your odds of getting in, what things are a good fit. So there's probability of admission, but also good fit. So for example, let's say you want to do engineering, or you want to do engineering in a big city. You put in those preferences, and it will filter those schools as well. So you can type in all of that information, and every year or every term, as your grades change and your profile changes, you can update your stats on an algorithm, and that will give you new recommendations. So hopefully you're getting better and better recommendations. Hopefully the student's improving. So that's kind of how it works. Then our private clients have a more powerful version of the algorithm, which has more detail to it. But that basically is the way it works.
Okay. Rebecca, I want to know about, the funding aspects, particularly for South Africans, because South Africa, unlike the United States, particularly Ivy League schools, there's a big subsidy on tertiary education in South Africa. And I can imagine that the cost of a year at, let's say, I went to Rhodes University, amazing university, I think it's the best in the country, right? A year at Rhodes University versus a year at Columbia or Brown, right? I can imagine that price-wise, those are different. These are different universes, not even countries or continents, right? So from that point of view, are there concerns like that from South Africans, growing on board? Because I can imagine that there must be a little bit of a price shock. Like, you said how much?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's a few thousand dollars difference between Rhodes and Columbia, for example. And certainly for South Africans, funding is a concern. We get the double whammy of both international fees and obviously our kind of poor exchange rates in terms of our currency.
Yeah.
So certainly a lot of our clients would be looking for some form of funding, and we work with them on all aspects. So I know Jamie spoke through, the academic and the advisory. Part of that really is also advising around accessing some funding, scholarships, accessing scholarships, financial aid, and so on. So as part of their program, students that are needing some sort of funding or financial aid will be able to work with one of our advisors, and in order to make the right decisions about funding, be able to have their documents reviewed, advised in terms of what documents to submit, how to fill them out, in order to help them make the right decisions about funding. So certainly a large majority of families that we would work with would absolutely be looking for some kind of funding to bridge that gap, and it would vary, between some people who might need, 20% to bridge a gap, and others who may need full funding. And throughout the consultation process, I talk openly with clients about, about what that looks like for them, how feasible it is as well. Certainly those are important conversations to have too.
And just adding on that, we take equity as a big responsibility at Crimson to make sure that students from all kinds of income backgrounds can afford our services. So for example, in New Zealand, we have a scholarship which serves the Indigenous community, and basically one of our scholars, Sam Taylor, just got into Harvard after 3 years of our support, and he's paying around $4,000 a year compared to $60,000. So he's paying a cheaper price than the local university in New Zealand to go to Harvard. That includes his flights, accommodation, and all of his books and tuition expenses. So there's a lot of kids who are getting good funding from South Africa to attend the US.
And I mean, in terms of this round, we results coming in all the time in terms of the 2019-2020 admission round. But we've already had a number of students who have got, so one student got $50,000 a year, another student $50,000 over 4 years, $20,000 a year. So we're seeing that come in all the time in terms of accessing that. But funding is a huge focus for people in South Africa.
Do you guys see some demand? Because I can imagine that it's not only the US or the UK that you guys are helping people to get into schools. Is there, are you guys also, I guess, helping? Because having gone to Rhodes, one of the most interesting things about Rhodes is that it's the university in South Africa that has the biggest proportion of international students or for the universities in South Africa. And that sort of awoke me to the fact that, there is demand for, I guess, tertiary education in South Africa. So do you guys also help from that point of view, maybe people, someone who's sitting in, let's say, Nigeria or France? Because we had a lot of people from all over the world, particularly the United States and Europe coming, and stuff like that. So do you help that, the reverse transaction, does that also happen? So,
yeah, we do. And we have, students applying to schools in many different countries, like, for example, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Singapore, the Middle East. And one interesting school, for example, is New York University, Abu Dhabi. This is a New York University school, which is actually an American school from New York, that has opened a campus in the Middle East. And basically, as long as you get in, you generally get full funding to attend it because it's a new university with a very, very generous philanthropy behind it. And so as soon as you get in, they actually pay for you to go over there and check out the school, and they pay for you to then study at the school. So we definitely take a very global focus. If you look at the rankings, typically US and UK dominate rankings, but we have many, many clients that want to study in different places. Okay. Another popular spot, for example, is Australia for medical school. We send a lot of kids from around the world to Australia to become doctors because you can do direct entry and it's a very well-regarded track.
And that's very popular for South Africans because of the limited number of places at South African universities for medicine.
Okay. Jamie, my last question for you. How far do you want to see this thing actually going? Like, what's the end point? You are you worked on Wall Street, so you must have an exit strategy of some sort, or at least an end goal, somewhere that you want to see Crimson one day in the future.
Yeah, sure. So today, Crimson's the largest college admissions platform in the world. We send more than 1,000 kids every year to top universities at the high end. And we're in about 23 countries. So we're really excited by the scale we've currently achieved, but it's kind of only scratching the surface. Our next big step is to launch a global online high school offering A-levels, which has now been launched in New Zealand, and we're coming to South Africa soon, which means kids across the whole country, even if they're at a local school without A-levels, can take A-levels online with our top teachers part-time or full-time. And that will be, equipped with best-of-breed technology, and backed by some of our fantastic investors. So I think, phase one was really to open up the world to top universities and help bridge those gaps. And we're, really making great inroads towards that vision. Then phase two is to build this global online high school, which can partner with local physical schools to, bring the experience to the next level. And then we think, that's a great next chapter for Crimson that will really, continue to benefit our students. So take a student, like you mentioned earlier, who isn't at a school doing A-levels, they can join Crimson's Global Academy and take these extra A-levels. So that's the next phase for us. And we, want to continue to serve more and more students and keep the movement going.
Yeah. So that's been us. It's been a very fascinating conversation just around college admissions around the world. We're talking to Jamie Beaton, who is a co-founder at Crimson, together with Rebecca Pretorius, who is the country manager for South Africa at Crimson. They are an edtech platform that is helping students around the world to get into some of the best universities globally.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Some interesting takeaways is just how I think it's really cool that we actually got someone from Harvard to tell us what it's like to actually have a Harvard degree. You know, because we always hear about this mythical thing called a Harvard degree. So to actually see that it actually, you know, holds water from that point of view is actually quite cool. And just hearing just how much demand that there is for, I guess, international education, because it expands your mind. But more than anything else, the technology is what's really, you know, really impressing me, because I'm from Zimbabwe and I had to apply. I applied for myself to go to Rhodes the way I did, and that was a world on its own, because now you have to translate what does a Cambridge score mean for admission, and so like it's like a whole mountain of voodoo on its own. And at the same time, I have a sister who learned in Canada, and then we used an agent, because that's another world on its own. So I can definitely see that, you know, the business model, there will definitely be demand from that point of view. How can people get in touch with you guys?
So I think you can jump on our website, Crimson Education. There's lots and lots of resources there as well. But to get hold of our office in South Africa, just to email southafrica@crimsoneducation.org, and someone will reach out to you.
Okay. So southafrica@crimsoneducation.org. So that's been it for today's show. You can remember that you can find our podcast on Business Life. That's under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a Multimedia Life production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.